From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are Moment Magazine contributor Dan Revive and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. Welcome, Dan and Steve.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be with you, Kim.
Here are the issues. In a surprise televised public hearing before the U.S. House of Representatives committee probing the attack on the U.S. Capitol, the first White House employee to testify publicly appeared. Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, testified that the White House was aware protest on the day could turn violent, but did little to quell the situation. Hutchinson painted a chaotic picture of the White House on January 6, 2021. With Roe v. Wade overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, the legal spotlight has shifted to the states, where abortion rights supporters and opponents must contend with 50 different constitutions that in many places guarantee rights more broadly than their federal counterpart. In some states, lawsuits argue that new restrictive abortion laws are in violation of state constitutions, and the stakes have grown for ballot measures scheduled this year to amend those constitutions, whether to protect the right to an abortion or to eliminate it. President Biden announced plans to bolster U.S. forces in Europe to defend NATO territory. The NATO 2022 summit in Madrid came at a time of heightened global tension amid Russia's war in Ukraine. And a rescue and search operation are underway in central Ukraine, where authorities said 36 people were missing after a Russian missile strike there killed at least 18 people. And at least 53 migrants are dead after being trapped inside a sweltering tractor-trailer truck found abandoned in Texas. Two Mexican nationals tied to the smuggling tragedy were charged in U.S. federal court. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Well, Dan, in this surprise hearing that took place by the House committee probing the January 6th attack on the Capitol, Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, gave testimony that provided insight for the panel. So what stood out to you?
Well, the fact that she was an insider in Donald Trump's White House. Keep in mind that Cassidy Hutchinson is only 26 years old and yet was, well, I'll say courageous enough to come into a packed hearing room to speak to members of Congress, knowing that she's speaking to a worldwide TV audience, and say things that her former bosses would hate. And by that, I mean President Trump and Mr. Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, because she worked directly for Meadows. And the picture she painted about the various activities on January 6th of last year, the days leading up to that, the feeling in the White House, the picture was very colorful and very negative about the Trump team, as though she concluded, and she said at one point in her 2 hours of testimony, that the whole event, which of course culminated in about 2,000 Trump supporters invading the Capitol building, trying to, well, they did briefly stop the session of Congress confirming the election results. She said that it was all wrong in the name of a lie. So we know where this young woman stands, and that led to some claims that she was lying or exaggerating. And one last thing to point out, and I'm sure Steve will bring it up as well, is that she also told two anecdotes about President Trump where she had not seen him behave in that way, but him acting apparently out of control. That's something everybody's talking about, but supporters of President Trump say they just simply don't believe it.
Her testimony shows a clear-eyed view of what was going on from someone who really didn't have a whole lot of stake in the game of what was going on. She was basically a fly on the wall in many of these different meetings about and around what the then president and his group of people were trying to pull off on January 6th. I agree with Dan in that here's someone who is 26 years old, who has a couple of years out of college. She interned on Capitol Hill, but in no way would she have had the kind of experience or gravitas to fully understand and fully grasp everything that was going on around her. But with her clear-eyed and straightforward testimony about what she saw and what she heard and what she was told by others who were in the White House and had access to various different events that were going on, I thought that she gave us the kind of testimony that lived up to the billing. And just remember that the committee injected some drama by announcing on Monday that we're going to have a surprise hearing on Tuesday. And who is it going to be? It sparked a lot of questions. The Washington Illuminati started speculating on whether this could be so important, like in the Watergate hearings, when the president's own lawyer testified. Her testimony seemed to live up to that billing, that this was not only important and enlightening testimony, but I also felt that the message that her testimony sent to other 25, 26-year-olds is very important. Here's someone who was just new onto the scene, and as Dan mentioned, she was a Trump supporter. And one of the other things to look at in most of these hearings is that most of the witnesses and the questioners by the committee are Republicans, are people who supported Donald Trump originally. So I found the testimony to be quite dramatic, and we'll wonder what kind of impact someone this young is going to have on other young people who might vote and are being targeted by both political parties to vote in November.
Steve, is it possible that the committee made a mistake by leading Cassidy Hutchinson to discuss two incidents which seemed to show that Donald Trump had a fiery temper? One of them could be quite important, claiming that after his speech on the morning of January 6th last year, a speech outside the White House, he got into the presidential vehicle and insisted that they drive him to the Capitol, where Congress sits, and they refused on security grounds. No, sir, it's not safe. We have to take you back to the West Wing at the White House. And she testified that she was told, right, by one man who had worked in the Secret Service and now was a deputy chief of staff at the White House, she was told that President Trump lost his temper, tried to grab the steering wheel, said, "I'm the president, take me to the Capitol," and then even lunged at the neck of one of the Secret Service agents. And then after that, there's a denial. The other incident, by the way, that supposedly the president lost his temper upon hearing that his attorney general had given an interview that he hated, and the president flung his lunch on the wall, and Cassidy Hutchinson could indeed testify she saw ketchup on the wall. And of course, that sounds very dramatic and direct, but she didn't see the president fling the plate. The reason I'm putting it that way, supporters of Donald Trump say that's hearsay evidence. It would never stand up in court. But that's where we have to remember this isn't a court of law.
This isn't a court of law. This is a court of political public opinion. The Congress and this committee have no legal jurisdictions. They are not prosecuting the case under American law. They are presenting the facts as they have found them. Is it going to be a mistake by the committee to have this hearsay evidence injected into the proceedings? That depends on what other information the committee already has. It seems that they have already gotten information, if not direct testimony, but certainly have debriefed the other individuals involved in this incident. At least they have talked to the former Secret Service agent turned deputy chief of staff. They have talked to him. Will they put him on the stand and make him testify to this story? That's something that we're going to have to see. But so far, this committee has dotted almost all of the I's and crossed almost all of the T's in presenting their information. And there is an assumption that they have this. Will they be able to bring on the Secret Service agent who was at the wheel of the SUV on that day when the president said, "I'm the president, take me to Capitol Hill"? That's something that we're going to have to see as these hearings move on, or seemingly at the halfway point of the hearings. And there is much more that the committee says is still coming in as far as information and leads. And they have many more people to summon and to talk to. They have put out a subpoena for the president's lawyer, Pat Cipollone, who is the source of some of Cassidy Hutchinson's information that she relayed on Tuesday.
One last thing I'd add, people do wonder about the impact of all this. Donald Trump has suggested he might run for president again in the year 2024. But I've heard from Republicans who donate a lot of money to campaigns that they hope he doesn't run, and they're trying to choose new favorites who might run in the next election.
As well as, if he decides to run, when is he going to announce as a candidate? There is a lot of concern that presidential candidate Donald Trump would feel and perhaps be somewhat immune from being prosecuted. It is not a good look for the United States of America, for Democrats who are in control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency to prosecute a political opponent. It won't look good. So there are all kinds of things that are weighing on actually prosecuting not just the former president of the United States, but others who were involved and may have been involved in this scheme for January 6th.
Very nice summary, both of you, on the latest public hearing and what's going on with the investigation of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. But let's move on to our next topic. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade decision on June 24th. With this overturn, there are 22 states that have laws to restrict abortion access. 16 states plus Washington, D.C. have laws that protect access to abortion without the Roe v. Wade decision. With abortion now left in states, what can we expect in the coming months at the poll?
Roe v. Wade is going to be one of several major issues confronting voters when they go to the polls in November. A majority of people in the country do believe that women should have access to abortion services. Whether that has restrictions around it or whether it's unrestricted, most Americans believe that women should have the right to decide how to manage their bodies and whether or not to terminate a pregnancy. So this, along with the January 6th investigation, along with inflation, along with a myriad of other issues confronting the United States and confronting the American people, this will be part of the political calculations when people go to the polls in November.
It's worth noting that in the so-called midterm elections, when it's not the presidency that Americans are voting on, but it's every member of the House of Representatives and about one-third of the U.S. Senate, that voter turnout tends to be low. It depends on the location. Sometimes some of the individual races are more interesting, but most Americans don't seem to care about midterm elections. Maybe this year they will. The Supreme Court had one ruling that liberals absolutely hated on the guns issue, striking down a law in New York State. Now this has national importance, which really limited the ability of people to carry guns outside their homes. And then the very next day, the Supreme Court issued this ruling that leaves it up to the states when it comes to abortion rights. And so, as we heard, nearly half of the 50 states plan to ban abortion. And so women will have to travel to other areas or give up on the ability to end their pregnancies. A lot of people are upset about that. It may have a big impact. And some Democrats describe the Supreme Court as a mostly Republican conservative institution. And so the Democrats are saying, oh, the court went too far this time. We bet that this will be good for Democrats and it'll be bad for Republican candidates.
One of the things to remember about the Supreme Court is they are unelected. However, they are appointed and confirmed by people who have won elections, nominated by the president, confirmed by the United States Senate. What this decision on Roe v. Wade is a culmination of 50 years of work by religious groups and cultural conservatives to win elections at the very lowest levels, at local and state levels, putting themselves in positions to appoint prosecutors and judges who work the legal and political systems to accomplish the goal of reversing a woman's right to end their pregnancies. It means that not just presidential elections, but every election has consequences. And this is what Democrats hope to bring across and have the American electorate understand, that their vote has consequences. It may not be tomorrow, but certainly Americans are going to have to live with this ruling and other rulings by this court for about a generation until more justices replace the justices that are already there.
Really good points. And in looking at the upcoming midterms, what kind of a complication do you see this presenting for Republicans at the polls?
Democrats are working hard to pin down Republicans as to whether or not they support or oppose this decision. And by putting Republicans on record, it's the Democrats' hope that Republicans will be the dog that actually caught the car that they were chasing and say, whoa, 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 this may actually endanger my political standings. It really depends on how successful Democrats are in getting people out to vote.
Well, it's time now for a quick break. And when we return, NATO holds its annual summit in a world transformed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voaafrica.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, Moment Magazine contributor Dan Revive and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. Well, during the NATO summit in Madrid, President Biden announced increased U.S. military presence in Europe, including a permanent U.S. base in Poland. He also vowed the summit would send an unmistakable message that NATO is strong and united. What would you all say is Russia's reaction to NATO stepping up its game?
Russia seems especially concerned that its neighbor Finland intends to join NATO, and NATO's letting both Finland and Sweden join the Western alliance. And the Russian government, including President Vladimir Putin, said that the Russians will respond in kind. I believe that's going to mean a very visible military buildup, maybe more threatening missiles will be on the Russian side of the border, very obviously pointed at NATO countries, maybe capitals. We're returning to the kind of tension we had before the end of the Cold War, which was more than 30 years ago. Now, NATO is pointing out for Putin that he really ought to think about this, that because he invaded Ukraine, he is not weakening the NATO alliance. The alliance, in fact, is stronger. That President Joe Biden has decided to lead an effort that includes more U.S. troops and military aircraft to be stationed in Europe, more ships as well. And so if Putin wanted less NATO, as one NATO leader put it, he's ending up with more NATO. And maybe he should think twice about invading any place. And maybe he should think twice about this continuing war in Ukraine.
That was a point that President Biden made at the very start of his end of NATO summit press conference, making the point that he told President Putin before Russia invaded Ukraine that if that happens, he will face a stronger NATO, that NATO will be strengthened by any action that Russia takes against Ukraine. And so far, that has played out. And what it is also doing, it's sending a message elsewhere. It's sending a message to China, because China also has its eyes on Taiwan specifically, and whether or not China does something to retake, as it has vowed, that Taiwan is its own territory, that it belongs to China, that if it makes any action, they may have to think twice, because not only will they face not necessarily NATO, but certainly a strengthened alliance that will work to deter other aggression around the world.
And in our last topic, at least 53 migrants are dead after being trapped inside a sweltering tractor-trailer truck found abandoned in Texas. At least 62 people smuggled from Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras were in the trailer. Officials said the use of large trucks to pack together and conceal migrants has been on the rise. So when we're looking at this situation, is the Biden administration is doing enough to prevent these types of tragedies at the border?
It's not just the Biden administration, it's the American immigration system in total. There hasn't been major immigration legislation in decades. Both parties are afraid of putting forth immigration policies that may get rejected, that will perhaps bring in undesirable people. Since September 11th, 2001, the United States has been very, very careful about who it lets into the country, why they let them in the country. The issue of immigration has been one that is somewhat endangering the economy. We can see it now with the unemployment figures. We see many jobs that are still going unfilled, yet they're necessary. And many times it is immigrant work that does the work that is not happening, fills these jobs. Many of them are service jobs. Many of them are labor jobs. And historically, immigration workforce has come in and done this work. And the issue for politicians is America still a country of immigrants? That is something that the political parties are still trying to work out. And I do not see any immigration legislation on the horizon anytime soon.
Well, Steve, that's so wise on the wider issue of immigration, where Republicans and Democrats can't seem to reach agreements on making any modifications or improvements to immigration law. And so let's say you're somebody in a Central American country and you feel your life is terrible or dangerous, and you hear that there's a better life to the north in the United States of America, as of course hundreds of thousands in recent years have done, traveling through Mexico to the border with Texas or another state, and then crossing a river, paying someone to smuggle you in, sometimes actually walking to an official border station and claiming political asylum at that very point. And again, the Trump administration, the Biden administration, you know, have sounded different on this, as though the Biden administration is more welcoming toward immigrants. But in the end, the border is still closed and people have to cheat or break the rules if they think they're going to get into the United States. And in this tragic case of more than 50 migrants dead in the back of a truck, well, obviously they paid somebody to bring them into the United States. The truck driver and an acquaintance of his are being charged by the United States Department of Justice. They could face the death penalty or life in prison over all these deaths. These incidents are going to happen, I believe, even if immigration laws were changed. But as Steve says, there's no indication the laws will be changed anytime soon.
As we close out the show, I'd like to get your thoughts on what is weighing on your mind this week.
Well, I'll be brief because it's also in the news these days. Iran and the other countries that signed a nuclear accord with Iran in 2015 are negotiating again. The United States pulled out because President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the deal in 2018. But the Biden administration is interested in rejoining the deal, knowing it would have to ease some sanctions against Iran. It would have to release Iranian money. And so negotiations have resumed, this time not in Vienna, Austria, but in Doha, Qatar. And maybe there's a chance that there'll be a breakthrough and there will be a new Iran nuclear accord, which apparently would slow down Iran's work toward nuclear weapons, but on the other hand, would release lots of money to Iran. And therefore, it's highly controversial. Israel's very concerned, and most Israeli officials want no deal. Instead, keep the sanctions that they believe can strangle Iran.
What's on my mind is the 4th of July Independence Day holiday. It's upon us, and I'm wondering about the arc of the democratic experiment here in America, where we are in it now. I vividly remember the assassinations of the 1960s, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and then Martin Luther King Jr. Then there was Watergate, the disgrace of President Nixon. But the nation survived that, and the divisive presidential elections of the 90s led to the 2000 presidential election that was eventually decided in the Supreme Court. America survived that. Now, 246 years after the birth of America's democracy, it faces another and perhaps its biggest test of resilience and respect. And that's what I'm thinking about as we celebrate the July 4th Independence Day holiday.
Happy Independence Day, Steve and Kim.
Thank you. And thank you both for your thoughts. And we will end the show on your thoughts. My thanks go to our panelist, Moment Magazine contributor Dan Raviv, and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to visit us at voaafrica.com for all of our VOA current affairs shows. Thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.